Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyla Tsinis.
Kayla Itsinis. I'm Kayla Itsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, this is Nathan, and I just wanted to give you all a content warning for this episode up top. We are discussing season 2 of Broadchurch, which, just like last week, deals with themes of sexual assault, underage sex, and murder. Thank you very much. And welcome to another Happy Pod, the only podcast in the world. My name is Nathan. As always, I'm joined by my co-host. His name is Lawrence Thomas Heisey. Lawrence, hello and welcome to my show.
Hello.
Shut the fuck up. No one cares, Lawrence, because you need to tell us what this silly little show that is mine is all about.
Okay. Nathan, this is the show where each week we get together to discuss something in the realm of pop culture. It could be a movie, it could be a little telly show, it could be a video game, but the main thing is that we do so without any of the toxic, negative Nelly discourse that is oh so prevalent in this day and age.
I've wrote the intro for you. Stick to the script. Stop adding in new words, okay?
There wasn't a single gap there. That was smooth.
This is what started your issues to begin with, okay? This is why I had to write the script for you. Stop going off course, okay?
It needs a bit of my flavor, no. Otherwise it just sounds like an admin statement. No. It sounds awful.
Hey.
Okay, well, I didn't mean that.
Hey.
Sorry.
I'm not
sorry.
This.
How are you, Nathan?
I am wonderful. I've literally never been better in my entire life. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
What are you laughing for? That was a true and factual statement, and I won't hear otherwise. Okay?
You said that with a gleeful smirk.
I said it with no such thing, okay?
Okay.
It was 100% factual, and you cannot prove otherwise.
It's true, I can't, I guess. Nathan, I am well, other than the fact that I have trimmed my beard too short, and it's a terrible time to do so, because now my festive double chin is out, and also the air is cold, because we are in the middle of winter.
Well, okay, so, we're in the beginning of winter, first of all. Like, this is the start of winter.
It doesn't feel like that, it feels very cold outside, there's always a frost.
Well, yeah, winter gets cold. Welcome.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, it's gonna get colder, okay? So
it better not.
It will. It will. Wait till January comes, mate. It is gonna get so much colder. What did you say? I don't care. here's the thing. Your beard, whatever you did, Shaving, I feel like this happened to you like a month ago as well.
It did, yeah.
You shaved like a little fucking Lin-Manuel goatee in to yourself.
Right, so yeah, so I've actually, like, I don't know if you can see, I've kind of done that again a little bit.
This is great content.
It's not as
for
egregious.
Listeners. Yeah.
No, look, I got, last time it was a mistake. This time it was just, I shaved because I, like, had a little look at myself in the mirror and I was like, you look disheveled. Just shave. So I had to shave. And then I went, oh, nah, short again. And then my wife came home and she went, will you stop doing this to your face? And I went, okay, sorry.
But you know you don't look good with a shaved face, so...
But it's not shaved. I have a beard. You can see me. I still have a beard. It's just a shorter beard because my beard's normally fairly long.
You, with all due respect, you don't have the jawline to pull off a clean or even a short beard. Like you.
You don't think I know this thing?
I'm the same. Like, we need to cover this up as much as possible, okay?
Was it? I always see that, like, people compare beards as, like men's, the average man's version of makeup.
Oh, it 100% like, is, yeah.
Yeah, just hide some imperfections, hide my not-so-strong chin, and, well, both of my not-so-strong chins.
Beard and a haircut is the male equivalent of makeup. And I haven't had a haircut in 2.5 years, so
yeah, how's that show me. I mean, again, not great content for the audio listeners, of which there is only one option, which is audio, but give us a little look, give us a flourish.
I mean, it's here, mate. I don't know what you want.
I thought it was tied back a little bit. I feel like it's like stopped growing. I feel like it was.
It definitely hasn't. No.
Does it get to a point where it like chills out a little bit?
It's slowed down, but it's still like.
Because girls get like 2 haircuts a year, don't they?
I don't know. It depends on the girl.
I mean, that's true.
They're not a monolith, Lawrence. Okay.
No, Nathan, I can definitively say that all girls only ever get two haircuts.
Oh, I won't
stand
for this.
And it's blasphemy.
I won't stand for this. No, absolutely not. I'm going to be the voice for women, okay?
Okay, so, I see. Oh, okay,
me,
it starts.
A man is going to be the voice for women. Lawrence, what are we here to do, to discuss, to have a good old time? Well, maybe not. What are we here to do?
Okay. So, Nathan, it is our second week of Crime Drama Christmas. We are talking about Broadchurch Season 2. Why did you sigh? Did you forget to say it yourself and you're cross?
No, I forgot. I should have done the content warning up top. Now I'll have to put it in at the beginning.
That's okay.
I just copied last week's, actually.
I mean, yeah, exactly. It'll be the same stuff, won't
it? Yeah, that'll work. Will it?
Yeah, repurposing. It's a spoiler warning. A content warning. It's fine. You don't have to do one fresh every week.
You kind of have to take that stuff seriously, Lawrence. It's pretty serious.
No, I'm not saying don't put it in, Nathan.
Yeah, but you'll say, yeah, it's whatever. You just put in any content warning. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, they'll just...
Content
the last
warning. This podcast contains bees. All right? It's not really relevant, is it? Exactly. See?
I don't think that's what I was getting at, and I think you know that.
Well, no, it sounds like you're saying any content warning will do, which is not the case. The idea of a content warning is that it warns you against the content.
Did I ever say that that wasn't the case?
Seems like you did. I'm just saying.
Nathan, can we please get into Crime Drama Christmas?
Lawrence, welcome to... Shut the fuck up. Lawrence, welcome to Crime Drama Christmas, also known as Broadchurch Season 2, for this week anyway. Last week, we obviously discussed Broadchurch Season 1. We didn't just decide to do Season 2 for the fucking fun of it. And now here we are. It's Christmas, it's crime, it's murders on the beach. Except we already did the murder. Murders in a town called Sandbrook.
Yeah, murders in a nice quaint new build estate.
Yeah, which looks like every single new build estate in the UK. They all look the same, don't they?
They do, and like, more to your point, I was genuinely watching it, and like, I had that really stupid thing of watching this, and it was like a close-up of the street.
Yeah.
And I could see a few houses, and I was like, that looks really familiar. And it took me a good second. I went, well, hang on, of course it looks familiar. They all look fucking familiar.
Yeah, every fucking street in the UK looks the exact same, mate.
Yeah, it's very true. So you've seen Broadchurch all before. You knew that Season 2 was coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
The point I'm getting, it's a larger point I'm making. I'm doing a bit of a setup.
No, but what do you mean I knew Season 2 was coming? Is it I knew it was coming for this podcast? Or like, no, I knew it was coming when the show was...
So you have watched the show?
Yes.
As a whole, in its entirety before?
Yes.
All seasons of that show?
Yes.
And yet, as one of my closest friends, you decided to let me get involved and invested... When you knew that this season was coming.
What do you mean?
I don't like Season 2. No! I'll wait for them.
You got the whole thing.
Right,
what? You're acting like I made you sit through fucking... Like, I don't know. What's the bad thing? Fucking The Flash or something? Or, like... I don't know, something that's bad.
No, right, this isn't... It's not bad, but it's not Season 1, is it? Like, it's just not...
Oh, you do my fucking head in so much.
Why?
You have this,
something...
You have this complex about you where, like, you see something and then, like, you see season... And if it's good, like, if the first season is good, you're like, well, nothing can be better than that, obviously, because it's the first season. There's absolutely no way... anything can be better than the first one. You have this complex about you where the first one, no matter what it is always the best. And everything else after it is subpar because it's not the first one.
Okay. I prefer Daredevil Season 3 to 2 and 1. I prefer Doctor Who Season 4 to 1, 2 and 3. I prefer Succession 2 to any other season of Succession. I could go on. I just prefer better seasons of TV, which Season 2 is Broadchurch, but it's not Broadchurch at its height, which I saw in Season 1. It's not as good. You must think the same. I'm pretty sure you said last week it's the same. Like that I hope it only gets better, and you said I'm not sure.
I think it's as good as Season 1.
Okay.
I think it's of an equal... I don't think it's better.
Yeah.
I think it's of an equal quality. Like, at no point when I was watching Season 2, when it aired, was I like... This is fucking dreadful. Like, I am having a terrible... Well, I should just stop watching this because this is fucking dire. Like, at no point was I watching. I was fucking gripped week to week. I was absolutely gripped. It was intense. The courtroom drama aspect of it was chilling. It was thrilling. I was hooked to find out what revelations would come next, which way the trial would go. And then, of course, the investigation into Sandbrook and everything like that. I was very much invested in the story.
See, I
didn't warn you that it was bad because I didn't think I needed to, Lawrence, because, spoiler alert, I enjoy this. And I guess that makes me a criminal. But I refuse to apologize for that.
That is fine. I just think this is like, I don't know, man. It there's certain threads that just, like, at the end of Season 1... I said to you when we first started the show, I was surprised to learn that this wasn't an anthology.
Oh, again, you and your fucking anthologies. Fuck off with your anthologies. Let me ask you something. Why do you enjoy anthologies so much?
Because I like the ever-changing setting. I like that it like can keep listen before you do your little annoying hand gesture.
I was just going to say why. That's all, but continue.
Okay. Right. I like that something can keep, like, a tonal approach. Like, I mean, perfect example is the Knives Out movies that are going on, right? I like that character as a lead detective, but I enjoy that the setting and, like, the messaging can change. And, like, it can be with a whole new set of characters and, like, you never get time for characters to grow old or stale because you say what you need to say and then you leave them behind and you move on to something else. I like all of that.
I like character development, personally.
I like seeing
characters grow and learn new things and change and revelations come out about the past and how that affects their future and that type of stuff. That's why I'm always for a non-anthology, whatever, just a normal thing, I guess.
Because, just whatever the other version is.
Yeah. Black Mirror. It was good. Borderline unwatchable now, in my opinion.
It's very much like the microwave is out to kill you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all are good. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, and I also, like, I don't want this to be that. I was surprised that it wasn't, because when I knew that Season 1 ended with the killer being revealed, it kind of felt like, and I was wrong to a degree, but it did feel like certain characters had nothing left to give. And I think that is shown in this season by the fact that the courtroom drama stuff is gripping. Like, the best parts of the season when we're in that courtroom.
Mm.
But, like, I don't know. I feel like the show was, like, a bit, like, not confident in itself. And it still needed to solve a mystery. So it went, well, we never really got round to the Sandbrook stuff. So let's go back to that. And I feel like I was watching two different stories. The reason why Season 1 worked so well for me, I think we said this last week, is because the killer could have been anyone in this small town. So not only is the investigation gripping, but it's also the emotional turmoil of all the characters going through the same thing at the same time, which I really, really liked. In this, it's like Olivia Colman has these gut-wrenching scenes where she has to look at the man that was her husband and watch him destroy everyone's lives even further. And then she walks out the courtroom and then David Tennant goes, let's go and do something completely unrelated to this. And I just like all of that, all of the Sandbrook stuff, I'm not going to say it wasn't interesting, but I was so excited for season two, and it just like was, I don't know. I feel like it was splitting its time. It was trying to commit to two things, and I'd rather it just was steadfast on the first thing. Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
you really don't think that there is a division in the story here?
Well, there's two separate storylines, but I don't see how that's a bad thing. Like, you say, you know, you have fucking Olivia Colman going from courtroom scenes to, like, the Sandbrook investigation, but she's not, like, you know, having heart-wrenching, traumatic experiences in the dock to then be like, off I go and do my little investigations with my little magnifying glass, aren't I a fun little detective? Okay?
Yeah.
It's not like a huge fucking tonal shift. She's still very much dealing with all the shit and the fucking pain of the trial while she's doing the investigation. And in some cases, in quite a lot of cases, it actually overlaps and fucks up the investigation because of it. Like, you have the fucking scene where she's... where they've got fucking Claire in her old house, and because of what came out of the trial, fucking Beth comes over and, like, fucking starts having a go at Ellie and all that type of stuff. So, like, they're not, like, two completely separate storylines. They are linked by the characters in them. It's not like we've got two different stories and they don't meet up anywhere at all. They are linked.
I think... See, that thing that you mentioned of Beth kind of... blowing that kind of investigation situation going on, like, that's interesting and cool when they, like you say, when they do meet up and they do, the stories do kind of converge in on one another. But, like, I don't know, for me, it just feels like there's two different things going on, and, like, maybe it's personal preference, but I felt like it was just, when we cut away to Sandbrook, I was like, it always felt a bit jarring. Like, it took me, like, 5 minutes to settle into watching stuff that was largely unrelated to what was happening. And I get that, like, it furthers David Tennant's character, and it does go to kind of, it does go a long way in showing us how Ellie is as an investigator and a detective now that she's had a life-changing experience that pertains to how good she can be at her job. But, like, I don't know, I just felt like with the Sandbrook stuff, it introduced two new characters, which is Lee and...
Claire. There's a few new characters I've introduced.
Well, yeah, like all the we'll get to the lawyers and all of that stuff. But like with what the one thing I fucking loved about season one is that each and we said this last week. It took us, or at least me, because I'm watching it for the first time. But when you watched it for the first time as well, I'd imagine you were just as shocked that it was Joe, and it felt like, oh my god, that was the last person I would expect.
Isn't it interesting that it does something different, though? And it's not just, oh, who is it again? It could be any one of these people again. Like, isn't it interesting that, like, instead of presenting you with a fucking Cluedo board of characters and a fucking motive and a weapon for all of them, it's like, right, we have this person, and this person. And it's a much more focused and streamlined version of that rather than kind of the exact same thing again. Isn't that more interesting?
I think it's different, and I admire them for, like, not trying to just do a carbon copy of season one, and I respect that, but I find it less interesting. I find it, like, I didn't need 8 episodes to be told, yeah, it was these two, and, like I was largely aware of that the entire time. Like...
It's not these two. It's everyone, though. Like, you're presented with three main suspects, and then the end and result is, oh, it's all three of them who actually did it. All three played an equal part in the tragedy.
Yeah, but, like, it telegraphs that from such an early point on. Claire is ringing Ricky, so there's obviously something going on there.
That's in, like, episode 4, though.
Okay, but, like, he's not really introduced until, like, episode 2. So, like, it's...
But that's what I'm saying. It's not telegraphed from the beginning, though, is it?
All right, then at very least, Lee and Claire are telegraphed from the very beginning, because they were, like, they're the main... They're introduced as, yeah, this guy probably did it, and this girl, I've got her in some sort of witness protection thing, but she wouldn't be a character unless she was involved. And
by nature, she is involved. She's in witness protection. I think the idea of, like, the whole Lee and Claire thing is that... when we're introduced to them, it's like, Oh, Lee, clearly, look at him. He's the most fucking shady, evil-looking bloke ever. He's threatening everyone he sees. He's a big, bad fucking new bloke on the block. Claire's the sweet and innocent little fucking, you know, she's never done no wrong, witness protection. She needs protecting, all that kind of stuff. But the roles are actually reversed by the end of it. That's kind of the twist. She's the more sinister one by the end of it. And he's kind of like forced into going along and doing something terrible, which he didn't really want to do. That's the twist. It's not like it's like telegraphed, like, I'm the killer and I'm always the killer from the beginning.
No, but like, I do see what you're saying, because I do think it's interesting that that kind of role reversal from what we typically expect. It, like, it does harken back to the first, what thing, something we liked about season one, which was that, like, you kind of do have to expect the unexpected. But there is an element of it as well that, like, I never bought Claire's character as I've never done anything wrong in my life ever.
You know, you're not really supposed to. She is shady. Like, everyone's shady in Broadchurch. That's the whole appeal of it.
I know. And I'm not gonna say it was uninteresting. I just found it less interesting than what was happening. Like, there were other plot lines that I was like really keen to see develop, and like that just
like what.
Like I said it last week, I wanted to see more of Nige and Susan Wright, his mother. And, like, you get that.
It's not really relevant, though, is it?
But then I would argue, nor is Sandbrook. Like,
Isn't it? Like, because throughout the first season, it's this clearly this big thing which has had a huge effect on the main character of the show to a point where it almost killed him. I would argue it's a lot more relevant than Nige and his mum.
I would argue that it's set up. Nige and his mum were in season one as two pretty important figures. Nige was like a primo suspect, and Susan Wright played a massive part, like taking the skateboard, going like all the stuff that was revealed between her and what happened with her husband. It all tied in really well. And
Important in the sense that everyone involved was important. There was all players on the board.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think, like, she's not more important than, like, Beth or Mark or anything.
No, obviously not, because they are the primary people that we're following. But, like, I don't know, with the Sandbrook stuff, I always just saw it as, like, set up for David Tennant. He's a man that, like, it was a real fucking shitty time in his life, and the stress of it did almost kill him, but that fuels him to go forward. Whereas, you know, and it can be interesting going back now that he's got a more positive attitude. He solved the case and he's on this is simplifying it, but like he's on a winning streak. He's just solved a case. He feels good about it. So he goes back and reopens the other case. But like, I don't know, to me, that was just like, that was part of his character and his setup. But to have it like revisited, it just felt less focused.
All right. So I don't.
Season one.
Okay.
I feel like we're just going to be debating.
Well, we might be. This one might just be us two arguing for the whole thing. And that's all right.
There's people come here for that. People like the fact that we argue and bicker all the time.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's more Still Got Legs.
Very true. Yeah.
So when you say, and this is, I just want to understand here. When you say, sure, like, it's just set up, it's just part of his backstory and stuff like that, why can that not be explored though? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, just because it's part of his backstory, does that mean we can't see it? Is there any reason why it's, you know, it's like some forbidden thing that we shouldn't see?
No, but then I'd argue the case. I think because we knew so much about Sandbrook from season one, obviously not
we know
as much
that
as we
much.
Know. But we know enough. We know that, like, the investigation fell apart. We knew that this pendant thing was important. We knew that, like, it kind of all coincided with the fact that David Tennant's wife was having an affair. And, like, it was a large stress-driving factor. But I feel like taking that, the setup for his character, a really strong foundation for a jaded detective, and, like, using it to tell a story is great. And then I have no problem if they want to go back and solve Sandbrook. But then I feel like it should have been unrelated to... I don't think they should have tried to have their cake and eat it too with showing the trial and having the aftermath of Broadchurch as well as Sandbrook.
It seems like your main issue is that there's two storylines, really. There's the trial and the murder.
Yeah, I think so, because I find one like leaps and bounds more compelling and interesting than the other one. And that, look, I understand that there's probably a part of that that comes down to preference. I was so in, like, genuinely, I like watch when I watched Broadchurch season one. I like maybe this came across the last episode, but I was like in love with it. I really, really enjoyed it. I was so gripped. I couldn't wait to keep watching more episodes. And I think maybe there's a part of me that, like, because there's less screen time devoted to that town and that group of characters because it's catering for two storylines, maybe that put me off it a bit. And maybe there's an element of I enjoy it less.
See, that's what I don't understand, though, because, like...
okay, yeah.
Because surely that's what you wanted with your whole anthology argument, though.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. The cake can eat it, too. Do go and do Sandbrook. I have no problem with Sandbrook being a principal storyline.
You'd just rather it wasn't the trial as well.
Yeah. Give me, like... I don't know.
Would you
like
not think there would be an element of stretching one out, though?
What? Stretching the trial out? Or?
Well, both of them. Like, if it was just all the trial and no murder, do you not think there'd be an element of it that? Or the other way around, just all the murder, no trial?
Yeah, but then you'd write more, wouldn't you? You'd...
Yeah, but that's stretching it out, though, isn't it? Like, we've got...
Not if you wrote more compelling...
No, like... no, because... But it's all right. Yeah, it's easy enough to say, just write more better stuff. Like, but come on. Like, if right, we've no, already like... got, like, four... Let's say we've got... Because the show is 8 hours in total. Let's say we've got four yeah. great hours of a trial, okay?
Yeah.
We've got four really compelling, really interesting hours, okay? But then your boss comes to you, he says, oh, you know that 4 hours you got? Double it. We need 8 hours, okay? Like... Yeah. Is it just as simple as being like, oh, yeah, no worries. I'll just write another four amazing, compelling hours and it will be absolutely great and it will all work coherently and there'll be no issues with that? Or will there be an issue of stretching it out and things will start to get tedious and there may be some repetition that comes into it and that kind of stuff?
If you plot out a season for 4 hours of content, right, of episodes, of narrative...
Yeah.
And then someone comes at you and the final hurdle and goes, double it. Yes, that's obviously going to be messy. But Chris Chibnall thrives at narrative episodic storytelling, right? He thrives at building a world over a season. So if he'd start, if from, and I'm not saying I can fucking do it better, I can't, obviously, but like, I feel like, yes, if they did it the way you're saying, it would be a complete fucking unhinged mess. But if they...
Okay, all right, I see what you're saying. If they plotted it out for 8 episodes
yeah.
as this, but what I'm saying, though, is we already have these 4 great hours of the trial, okay? Stranger Things season one, okay? 8 episodes, I think, great. What if it was 16 episodes, okay? And, like, it was 16 episodes from the beginning. They plotted out 16 episodes. Would it be great? Would it be as great? Would it be that great, concise story we have in 8 episodes, or because we're filling time, much like, you know, a lot of the issues with the TV seasons of old, like the broadcast TV seasons, where it's 24 episodes, each an hour long, they run for the whole year, they're like, there's a lot of filler in between. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, because obviously when you're making... And this was before the era of streaming and everything else. I mean, like, I know streaming was going on, but...
It was, like, on the cusp, being,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, but, it like, this wasn't made for... This was made for Saturday night TV.
Yeah.
So it had a scheduled amount of programming that it needed to fill, and I understand that. And I get
Tuesdays
it, and I also...
It was weeknights.
Huh?
It was weeknights.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, that makes sense, actually. can't bump Ant and Dex Saturday Night Takeaway, or the X Factor, or whatever else.
Absolutely
at the time.
Not.
No. But like, I don't know, man. They're just if this was like, oh, I've lost my train of thought about it. But like, I don't know. I just feel like they were making this season, and then they realized, hang on, Broadchurch is that detective show that people point at and go, that's that really good murder mystery detective show.
Mm.
And then they went, then they looked at what they had. They looked at that 4 hours that you're talking about.
Yeah,
and then I feel like they went, well, there's no murder mystery in this. That's, we're known for being the murder mystery show. And so they put in a murder mystery. And I don't think, it, like, I'm not saying they had a board meeting and after filming half of a season, they went, put more season in. Mm. But, like, it does feel very much like they were scared to make a season two without having a detective angle to it. Because largely, think about this, right? If it's just the trial, David Tennant and Olivia Colman pretty much have fuck all to do. Well, they're there to give testimony and whatever.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But it's, like, it's not the same show.
No, it wouldn't be. Yeah. But like, you made a season two, so make it work.
But they did. That's exactly what they did. You just say, rise to the challenge, make it work. So they did. They wrote an investigation and a murder storyline so we could continue on with these characters that we know and see their development and see the pains of them going through the trial and, you know, the effect that has on them and the big twist and everything like that. But then we also can, you know, tune in and see why we fell in love with the show in the first place. You know, the interest in murder investigation and satisfy that morbid fascination that we all seem to have with, like, murder and true crime and that sort of stuff, you know?
I do see where you're coming from. And there is a part of me that thinks, like, although I genuinely think this season is a bit messier than the first and a bit less focused, there is a part of me that's like, maybe it's just not what I wanted to see from a season two. And I can concede that in the sense of, like, because it wasn't for me, it doesn't mean other people were incapable of enjoying it. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it went well enough that there's a season three, so...
It was very well received, I think. Yeah,
this makes me genuinely really interested in what season three is going to be, because I did not expect this to be a split season of two situations. So I'm very very keen. But anyway, let's talk about some specifics.
I can tell you if you want.
No, don't tell me. I'm probably gonna have to start watching it tonight.
It's split in three.
It's split in no.
I'm joking.
No, please. And Joe's back on trial. what I really like about season two is that it does build on what we've seen before. You typically with that anthology and stuff that I was talking about, it would be left to our own speculation of where these things went. But like, this obviously has the trial of Joe, and Joe, despite him being pretty much fucking dead to rights, he literally confessed. Narratively, it turns out on its head and goes, oh yeah, no, this justice system can be exploited to fuck if you have made even one mistake.
That's why it's interesting. In the very first episode of season two, you know, we have the beginning of the trial. It's, you know, set to be just a pretty simple proceeding. It's a very standard stuff. He's already confessed. We've got him. Let's fucking go. He just needs to plead guilty. Off he goes. Jobs are good, him. We're done. Yeah. Sorted. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll plead guilty. I did it. Whatever. Off I go. But then twist. We have
big
the
twist.
We have there's a name for it, I'm sure. The
defendant?
No, the hearing to for him to plead. The plea hearing? I don't know. Whatever. The
We're not lawyers.
I don't know, but there's a specific term for it, which I know, and I can't remember it. Whatever. We have whatever
sentencing?
That... Yes! No, that's not it. No. Whatever, it's something. We have the oh, fuck, that's annoying me. We have whatever that is for him to play guilty or not guilty, and he's you know, he's dead to rights, Fleabag's defending him, she's like, yeah, he's going to say guilty, whatever. And then he's like... not guilty. And then Fleabag's like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And then the judge is like...
She fucking breaks her neck spinning around on the spot, yeah.
Yeah. And then the judge is like, say again? I'll give you another chance, brother. One more time, if you wouldn't mind. And then he doubles down, commits, not guilty. And like, oh my God. Beth is devastated. Everyone's angry. Everyone's crying. It's a great twist.
It is a great... And I was not expecting it. Like, it's one of them where, like, of course, narratively, you go to the trouble of, like, setting up a courtroom scene.
Yeah.
Only for a very boring narrative decision for Joe to just be like, yeah, I did it. Yeah, you may as well send me to jail. And I guess I'll see you guys all later. No, I love that this is, like, season one was everyone's dirty laundry being aired. And effectively, everyone being put on their own little trials in their own houses and having to reconcile with the fact that all their secrets and everything was out in the open. And this just kind of puts that into like a less subtle way, and it's just like it's calling like Mark up to the stand, and it was just and it's going like, did you have an affair? And he's like, Yeah, I did.
Well, that's the interesting thing about it, because, like, you say, you know, everyone's dirty laundry was aired, and it was, but only to a few specific people. To you know, to the investigators, to Alec Hardy and Ellie Miller doing the case, and, like, maybe one or two other people. But, like, this is, like, everyone knows. Now you got to stand up in front of the whole town and, you know, declare that, yeah, I cheated on my wife. Yes, I was planning to leave my wife that night. And you got to say that in front of your fucking wife. Good luck, brother. Like,
yeah,
not an easy thing to do.
No, and you've got, like, not only is it just not for the people that's in the courtroom, but then you've got, like, Ollie is there just fucking, like, practically fucking frothing at the mouth with his notebook.
Yeah.
Like, just wanting to get any story out and kind of... Well, the media haven't learned, have they? The media really haven't learned.
No, it kind of does that thing again. It kind of does that thing again where it's like...
Mm.
And it, like, there's like two people working for the paper, apparently, now. Like, it seemed to be a whole office in the first season, but now it's just, like, two people. And, like, you have Ollie, who's like, oh, I'm fucking live blogging, I'm live tweeting this. This is sick. Like, oh, big twist in the courtroom. Fucking Joe pleads not guilty. Oh, fucking hashtag and this. And, like, the fucking owner of the paper or whatever, she's like, no, we're the paragon of truth and justice, and we must only write what is correct and truthful and honourable. And but then they're like, but we're also good friends. And no, and we get along and we have no issues with one another. Like, I don't know. It seems weird.
It does seem weird. And I like that, like, there's in, like, the waiting area of the courtroom, Ollie is just, like, on Photoshop drafting two versions of, like...
Yeah, guilty, not guilty.
Yeah, this could go either way, so, like, better be prepared. And then, like, whoever is in charge of the paper comes up to him and just basically gives him a clip around the ear and is like, well, the fucking stop!
Yeah.
Stop this! But, yeah, no, I love all of that stuff. Do you know what I thought was quite clever was the introduction, possibly one of my most favorite things about this whole season, was these three, but mainly two lawyer characters that get brought in into the show.
Fleabag.
Fleabag, but then Fleabag's boss and the defense attorney and the other, the good one.
I forgot Fleabag was in this because I didn't know who Fleabag was when I first watched it.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, by the way. But, like,
yeah.
just Fleabag.
It's just Fleabag.
So I was watching this. And I was like, oh, fuck, it's Fleabag. Of course. Yeah, shit.
Mm.
But yeah, I had no idea who the fuck that was the first time. Yeah, so we have Fleabag. We have Fleabag's mum, which is also Fleabag's boss and not her mum. And then we have Blind Judge.
And Blind Judge, yeah. Soon to be Blind Judge.
Yeah.
No, not Blind Judge. Blind Lawyer.
Blind Lawyer, yeah.
Yeah. Matt Murdock.
Oh, yeah. Daredevil. Daredevil.
Yeah. Infinitely less impressive, what I'll say. I like Phoebe Waller-Bridge in this because I like that she's, like, she's playing a character for, like, the longest time has, like, she's almost, like, conflated this idea of being a good lawyer and delivering, like, a good moral justice. Like, if you're a defense attorney and you're really good at your job, and this is generalizing, but that can be a really bad thing for life.
Isn't there, like, so many scenes when you're like, I fucking hate you so much.
Yeah.
Like, I got so angry, and I've seen it, but I got so angry watching, like, some of those courtroom scenes, because, like, I know it's their job, but the way they just, like, attack and, like, fucking...
Mm.
Like, the scene in particular where they fucking accused Ellie of, like, Ellie saying, like, she was having an affair with Alec. Like, that was so frustrating. And just, like, the way they purposefully, like, back you into a corner so you get worked up and you get emotional and that kind of stuff. And then they're just like, whoa, come on now. You know,
why are you getting so emotional about it? Yeah, is it because you're not good at your job?
What's wrong with you? Why? This is just a simple question. Okay, like, oh, it's so frustrating, but really compelling, really interesting.
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff.
It does make you want to scream. And I will say that judge seemingly picks and chooses when she wants to intervene in these instances.
Because there
are sometimes, where the blind lawyer is like, Daredevil goes, I motion for this to be addressed in the court. And she's like, I'm not really sure if that's relevant. And then meanwhile, the other person is like, you had an affair, didn't you? And he's like, and Ellie's like, no. And he's like, well, you did, because I said so. And you did, and you did it here, and you did it then. Is that a lie? And she's like, what the fuck's going on?
Isn't that the mark of a good lawyer, though, knowing, like, when to and when to not? Like, pick and choosing your battles, because if you go in that hard all the time, it's not going to work out for you. You need to find the best course of attack. Like,
you find a pressure point, and you can, like...
You need to find something you can exploit, exactly.
Yeah. But I don't know, there's... Maybe it's because, like, don't get me wrong, if I'm ever up for something, like, that I didn't do...
Yeah.
I want this woman.
She's good.
Because she's going to fucking sort me out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but the frustrating thing is, he did it, and we know that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're left kind of screaming, and we're like, she didn't have an affair, she's actually really hard done by in the first season, and it wasn't her fault!
Yeah.
But no, there is this, like, there's this really, really interesting kind of component to that where, like, it's not justice, it's lies, and it's speculation, and it's... And they know that! They're not there, like, genuinely believing that Joe didn't do it.
Yeah, they don't know that, though, that's the thing. With lawyers, they, like... Yeah, it's all a grey area, because they're like, there's the moment where, like, Fleabag says to her, fuck, he definitely did it, and she's like, ah, we don't know that for sure. We do not 100% know that he, we're like 99%, but we're not 100% crystal clear sure that he did it, and that's, I don't know, how they sleep at night, I guess.
That 1% of wiggle room is crucial to their jobs. Like, it's something that I picked up on at the end, Something I picked up on at the end was, like, that in the closing argument, right, Daredevil gets up and she gives this incredible speech about delivering justice and what it means to, like, live honestly. And you sit down and you go, you can't top that. That's an incredible closing statement for your case.
Yeah.
And then the other woman gets up and just goes, jury, you need to, like, answer one thing. Can you categorically, right, 100% definitively say, I know for a fact he did it?
Yeah.
And you, as an audience member, you're sat there knowing the facts and knowing what they've been working on in terms of this pushing at certain gaps in certain stories. And you're like, from an outside perspective, like, they haven't watched Broadchurch season one.
We
they
know
don't
he did
know
it
this.
Because we saw Broadchurch.
Yeah, they haven't watched Broadchurch.
Yeah. Quick, get them a DVD. Get them a subscription to ITVX.
Yeah, that lawyer sucks. If it was me, I simply would have put on Broadchurch season one for the jury.
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's why it's, like, so interesting, because, like, going into the trial, we're like, oh, we fucking got this in the bag, mate. Like, bro confessed, man. Like, it's a fucking done deal. Get that jail cell ready. Like, fucking, here we go, boys. But then, yeah, by the end of it, and then when the judge is saying, like, there's no obligation on the defense to prove otherwise, it's just simply the case that did he or did he not or whatever. And it's like, yeah, this is kind of stacked against them. Like, somehow it's fucking flipped along the way, and it's like...
Yeah,
it's tough. It's really tough and frustrating.
Something that I like as well is that, like, what it addresses is all the TV-isms of last season. Like, there's certain kind of moments where, like, that matter so much. Like, Ellie did give her sister £1,000 for that debt, because she was just like, whatever you saw, I'm desperate, I need to know.
Mm.
And, like, oh my God... Like, in the moment, you're like, Ellie is on her wit's end, like, this is completely justifiable. But in a court, a lawyer is obviously going to be like, that's a bribe.
Ellie went in there and beat the fuck out of Joe. Like,
yeah, like, that's massively wrong.
Yeah, Mark fucking worked his way around a cop and went to see Joe. Like, all these things, like, in the moment, you don't think about it. You're like, sure, this makes sense. These are real people with real emotions. Of course they fucking... want to do this stuff. But then when it's presented in a court of law with fucking no context and then this other story imagined up around it, then you're like, fuck, it's not looking so good, is it, boys?
Yeah, when lawyers start filling in the gaps with the truth, and then, like, you're like, oh, yeah, no, you could paint this in a real different way if you don't have the full picture.
You can see why that makes sense and why that's something that can be believed, but...
Hmm. It sucks as well, because it's like, it mostly comes back to bite Mark and Ellie in the arse, who are the two people that have the most making up to do.
Yeah.
And, like, Jodie Whittaker, like Beth, is sat there in the pews every day listening to everything going on. And when the woman is like, and you worked your way around a police officer to go in and threaten Joe Miller, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you just see Beth's face go like, what has my fucking idiot husband done now? Like, can I have a break from this man's incompetence for a minute? Like,
what did you think about the Latimers during this? And like specifically, the relationship between Beth and Ellie as well.
It's what Beth and Ellie. I like that it kind of it obviously all of the relationships improve over time.
Yeah,
and I think,
but it's very much fractured at first. It's
yeah.
And oh, Beth fucking hates her.
Yeah, in the anytime she's anywhere near them, Beth's like, I'm gonna start verbally abusing this woman. Just straight up.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know, if last season kind of shattered them all apart, this is the season that like it takes its time, but Danny's death tore everyone apart, and now Danny's death, it kind of ends with Danny's death bringing everyone back together and realizing life can be fucked, and we know what's important, and we need to reconnect with what's important, because certain systems fail us in the largest way possible.
I really like what the show does with Ellie in particular, because, like, I want to give her a hug throughout this whole show.
I know.
She's so fucking hard done by. Like, at the opening of the show, like, her son wants nothing to do with her. The Latimers.
What's his fucking beef and all? Like,
he doesn't know. He's a lad, isn't he? He's a dumb.
I mean, you say he's a lad. He's a grown man now.
He's not. He's a little bit bigger because he's a teenager, and they'll fucking grow like wildfire.
In the first season, he's like, "Am I going to get in trouble?" And in this season, he's like, "Stay away from me, mum."
Yeah, he has grown up a bit. Yeah, Tom doesn't really want anything to do with Beth. He's living with his aunt and this kind of stuff. She's now just a standard uniform police officer. And that was interesting as well. Like, the fucking first scene of her doing, like, fucking traffic duty. And she's, like, you know, Ellie Miller, the friendly police officer detective who would be like, oh, no, I know these people. I trust everyone who's been so jaded and worn down by everything that's happened. She's like, oh, I'm going to the hospital. I didn't know I was speeding. I'm sorry. He's like, tough fucking shit. Here's your ticket, prick.
Wrong day to fuck with me, son.
Yeah. Just a good, like, good way to show, like, how, you know, well, she fucked over she's been, really.
She takes on the David Tennant role. She's with someone that is obviously a town local, and she's like, oh, we like to kind of give people a fair go about it here. Like, yeah. We like to give people the benefit of the doubt. And she's just as broken and pessimistic as David Tennant was in the early episodes of season one, where she's just like, no, it's not me. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know him. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like that, like, they all are kind of, the Latimers and Ellie are kind of, there's a nice, interesting kind of parallel going on where they're, like, regaining elements of their humanity as Joe is just trading every scrap of his for easy wins and easy get outs. Like, there's a line that Ellie has at the end of it all when, you know, I'll get to this scene later, and like, just while I'm on the point, Ellie says, like, you know, if you ever come back, I will kill you, and unlike you, I'll go to jail. Like, I will happily face the consequences.
Great line.
But yeah,
there's a moment I love just with Ellie and Beth. It's where, like, you know, like we were saying earlier, Beth comes over to, like, give Ellie some shit because it's just revealed in court that day that she beat Joe up, and because of that, the fucking confession is dismissed and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
she did a bit of a fucky-wucky, all right? It's kind of, the trial is a little bit fucked up because of her, basically.
Yeah. As if she needed more on her plate.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, and then obviously Beth comes over, she's really pissed, but then she starts going into labor. And she's like, you know, her water break, because she's pregnant, by the way. She then starts going into labor. The baby's coming. And obviously, Ellie's going to help her out. But Beth is still like, no, I don't want anything to do with you. Fuck off. You fucking ruined everything. And Ellie just has this great moment where she goes, yeah, well, tough fucking shit. I'm going to help you now. And there's nothing you can do about it.
What am I supposed to do? Just let you lean on this fucking public fence and fuck off.
I love those moments where Ellie just, like, she just snaps, and because everyone is so fucking mean to her in this show, everyone is just, like, so unnecessarily mean to her. And then later in the show, like, the moment where she snaps at Tom and is like, I've had enough of you. You're coming home with me, right? Fucking now. Your dad's a prick, all right? We're going home and we're getting this fucking sword. And he's just like, okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it's such a great moment.
I was ready to cheer when she screamed at Tom. I was like, yeah, you and all.
Yeah.
Like, stop. Give your mum a fucking break, man.
I know.
And he's there like, oh, I'm going to go in. It must be so painful because, like, as a child, that's a very conflicting circumstance to be in.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
It's like, I don't know, if you're a child and your parents are getting divorced and there's, like, it's not amicable.
Yeah.
Then there's just this nasty feeling in the air. This is that dialed up to fucking 11.
Yeah.
Right, because it's quite literally your mum is taking your dad, not this literally, but your mum is taking your dad to court to put him in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So I understand it must be conflicting for him, but there's an element of me that's just like, how are you, like, ride or die for your dad right now, brother? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, give your mum a fucking break. And it's always after, like, a loss that Ellie just walks out and, like, Olivia Colman plays it so well because it is a poke the bear scenario. You're just waiting for, like, the final straw to just fucking completely snap her in two, and she just goes off. And it's quite scary. She's quite intimidating, like, for this country bumpkin type character she's playing.
She invented acting.
Yeah, that's true. I heard that.
Yeah, she did. Olivia Colman. She actually invented acting. So.
That's very good of her.
Yeah,
and she shares her gift with the rest.
She did a good job.
She did. I was meant to say this. I meant to say this last week, but you've listened to the podcast, so you'll know. But in case anyone listening doesn't, there's this phenomenal, like, little anecdote she tells on David Tennant Does a Podcast. And it's how, like, this whole time, it was kind of arranged that the cast wouldn't, whilst filming season one, wouldn't know who the killer was.
Mm.
But, like, Olivia Colman's agent just kind of whiffed that in the first meeting.
You didn't mention, like, this.
Oh, did I mention this?
Yeah, we talked about this.
Did we talk about it, or did I say it on here?
I'm pretty sure you said it on here.
Oh, fuck it. Cut all that. Because if I did, then it's just making me like an idiot, isn't it? Like, I've fucking forgotten everything I said.
I think so. We definitely talked about it.
I know we talked about it, but I don't know if it was on here. Oh, either way.
Either way. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, one thing I like about what's going on here as well, and kind of like people's relationship to Joe, is Paul Coates, Reverend Rory,
yeah, who's great, by the way,
so good in this,
really understated, I think. He's not like one you immediately go, oh, the Reverend, yeah, he's a great character, but he genuinely is. He's very complicated, like, someone who's like a religious figure, and like you'd imagine that to be, like, you know, the paragon of, like, fucking good and holiness and all that type of stuff, but there's layers to that character, man. It's really interesting.
I love that character because he's the only one that's still, like, I mean, he really has to kind of put his money where his mouth is when it comes to his faith and how much he believes in redemption, and versus, like, how much of your character the wrongdoings you've done make up. And something that I love is that, like, he is complicated, right? He's now sober, but he was a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah.
So he's a man that's dealt with vices and has had to confront himself in an ugly way and admit that things need to change for him to be a good person.
Yeah.
And, like, confronting that so honestly, and then you've got a fucking a child killer staring you dead in the face, and he's like, oh, I can't go to jail, so, like, be fair.
Yeah.
And then
that seems to be his only... Like, the only moments where Joe is really honest is, like, when he's with Reverend Paul. And, like, that seems to be his only defense. He's, like, it's only, like, I can't go to jail. I can't go to jail.
Don't do the crime!
Yeah. And, like, he keeps saying, like, I thought he was supposed to be on my side. And it's so... I just want to hit him. What a prick.
Yeah.
I don't like
and
him.
And it ties in because, like, obviously, we only really got one episode with the true Joe.
Yeah.
Last season, but it's nice to see him expanded in this way that is just, like, it's bravado. We talked about it last week, but, like, how men often turn on the guilty tears.
Yeah.
To be seen as, oh, he's, you know, he's just a tough, tortured man. He doesn't have an outlet for his concerns and, like, all of this stuff. But like, in it's crocodile tears. Right? He's just shit scared 100%. Of fucking facing a consequence.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting that, like, throughout the show, you know, he's a reverend, so we see him in his fucking, his, like, collar and that kind of stuff. He, like, always has that on, but the one time he doesn't is right at the end, like, when they all bring Joe to the hut and stuff. That's really interesting. And, like,
my man is, like, God's turned a blind eye to this one. He knows I've been through the ringer dealing with this shit.
Yeah. I think it's really good. I like that character a lot. And I think it's interesting what he does, or what he proposes anyway, with Beth, and when they try to set up the charity in Beth's, in Danny's name,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. And he's like, I know you're not going to be thrilled about this, but there's, like, you know, a group that helps to reform sex offenders and try to give them a new start and that kind of stuff. And I don't know, I think that's something that's very uncomfortable to talk about, but also like, I can see where he's coming from, if that makes sense.
I think so. I think this is often a conversation, and I'm not going to say that we're brave, Nathan, for addressing this so publicly, right? But we are. This kind of thing is, and again, I do think, like, in a Chris Chibnall perspective, it's brave to put it on fucking primetime TV.
Yeah.
So openly, but like, this is a conversation that everyone has had behind a closed door.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Every single person has weighed up, like, when does it become wrong?
Yeah.
And because it's always wrong, but when does it become, like,
a problem,
irredeemable? And when does it become, like, past the point where you're, like, you're not willing to seek help and you're willing to indulge yourself?
I think the uncomfortable thing about it, the uncomfortable thing that no one really wants to talk about is, like, when it comes to sex offenders, and particularly child sex offenders and that kind of stuff, and paedophiles, we like to think of it in terms of very black and white. We like to think about it as, these are very evil people, and there's no grey area to that. They're wholly evil, and this is something they want to do because they're very, very evil people, because it's easier for us to see it that way. It's easier and more comfortable. It's not comfortable to reconcile with the truth, which is, like, this isn't something they chose. This is fucked, but, like...
No, but you're right, though.
They don't choose to have these feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no one chooses what they're... This sounds fucking awful, but, like, no one chooses what they're attracted to, you know?
Yeah. No, they don't. And I don't want to get too far into this, because I'm aware that... And we've spoken about this on our, believe it or not, our Barbie podcast. But Simu Liu had a take.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where he compared, like...
For a moment there, I was like, where the fuck did that...
Yeah, whoa, Lawrence, slow down!
Barbie? the Barbie podcast. Today we're going to discuss child sex offenders.
Yeah, but he very much got... His words got completely twisted and misconstrued and everything else.
100%.
But the crux of what he's getting at is, you are born liking what you like.
Yes, and people, like, said, well, oh, you're comparing homosexuality to paedophilia. Like, no.
No, not at all.
He's not saying, you know, paedophilia deserves to be part of the LGBTQ, because that's fucking wrong. Absolutely no way
is anyone
saying
that. That's dreadful stuff.
This is not something to be celebrated and to be prideful about. This is something that needs help. This is something that needs reform. This is, you know, something that people need fucking counselling for, and... Maybe throwing them in a jail and saying, well, fucking rot in there for the rest of their life isn't the best option for them. Maybe we should invest more into social services who can actually help these people and that kind of stuff. But
yeah, and resources to prevent problems before they become problems.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
For example, this scenario with Joe and Danny was.
Yeah.
Like, it was not... Obviously, there was, you know, their meetings were lacking a key component of consent, because as a child you can't legally do that.
Yeah.
But it was amicable. They were meeting on terms where they knew what they were doing and going.
Yeah.
And it like David Tennant says, it wasn't a problem, but that doesn't mean it couldn't have been.
Exactly.
And it's this charity and this work is about setting up resources to stop that, but also rehabilitate people that, I guess, come forward and say, I need help.
Yeah.
Which, like, and this sounds even more fucked, but, like, if you have that affliction and you are that way inclined.
Yeah.
Tremendously brave thing to do is put yourself out there for it. And say
100%, yeah.
And say I need assistance. I need to deal with this.
To admit that to someone would be
Jesus, fucking hell.
I can't even imagine
the stress.
Yeah, that like whatever, man. It's a really fucked up thing, and it is uncomfortable to talk about because, like I said, we don't like to think about it that way. We like to.
Mm.
It's so much easier to just think that these people are wholly evil, and of course there are people that are completely evil and do these things because
and there are certain people that don't deserve reform. There are certain 100%. People whose actions are unconscionable and then very much they are in need of rotting in a jail cell for the rest of their lives.
If they're not willing to show any form of like, you know, any signs of wanting to reform and any like any willingness to change, then sure, fuck off. But like
that's kind of what I like about Paul and the decision to bring up that charity, because it shows that like Paul is not blowing smoke, right? He's not chatting shit. He's there to help.
Yeah.
He is there to help Joe Miller.
Yeah.
If he can be honest and straight with himself and say he did what he did, and be forthcoming, and quite literally, like he by taking accountability, that's not pleading not guilty. That's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Right? The first step should be I need to repent, and I need to repent in the way that society has, you know, there are laws, 100%. And I broke one.
And Paul, he's bagged himself an Aussie baddie as well.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's... Because that's relevant to what we're saying. No, but what I'm saying about the reform is that he's not just, like, he's not blowing smoke, he's not chatting shit, right? He is... He wants to help people.
100. Like he's put his money where his mouth is at all times. He's not just like he's not like what, which I think some vicars and religious people very much can be. He's not just using it as like.
Oh, is this podcast going to go out?
I don't know. he's not just like the image of like.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah.
Let's move
it's
on.
it's not performative, and it's
that's the best way to put it. Yeah,
yeah. It's very much a this is a community man who has been there for every part of his community, and he wants to actually heal this wound that is kind of deep and cutting away at so many people.
Do you want to know something fun, Lawrence?
After that conversation, I'd love to.
Okay. This is a big shift and change. So,
is it about this Aussie baddie?
No, it's not about the Aussie baddie. It's nothing to do with that.
me and the bad bitch I pulled from living the Lord's way.
Good stuff.
sorry, go on.
So while this show was on, while this was airing, it was also airing at the same time as another show, okay? It was airing at the exact same time as Agent Carter.
Right, okay.
Now, Agent Carter, if you might be familiar with it, it's the Peggy Carter short-lived Marvel TV series. Lasted for two seasons. And it was airing at the same time as this. And the actor who plays Lee Ashworth... big bad Lee Ashworth, the scariest man ever, who's like, I'll fucking kill you. Like, I didn't fucking do it, but I'll fucking put you down. while this show was going on, at the exact same time, he was also playing the lovable, fumbling Jarvis. The butler Jarvis. Like, oh, good heavens, Miss Carter. I can't imagine what we're doing here.
Is he in Endgame?
He is in Endgame, yeah.
That's where I know his face from.
Oh, he's in a lot of stuff. He's in Dunkirk as well.
He's in Dunkirk?
I think he's in Oppenheimer as well.
Fuck it. Well, I mean, everyone's in Oppenheimer.
Well, yeah. Josh Peck's in Oppenheimer.
I'm pushing it.
Yeah. He's in quite a lot of stuff. He's a known face, anyway.
He's a known face, and he's a perfect face for this, because he's got a face that screams murderer.
Well, yeah, but, like, he also has a face that screams, I'm a fumbling, bumbling butler, and I'm very British and foppish and
this is that acting we've been talking about.
It is, yeah. Where did it come from? Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman was so kind as to share her gifts. All right, do you want to talk about some of the Sandbrook stuff, then?
I would love to. So we've got Gwen Cooper.
Yes. I like Eve Miles.
I do too. She's great, isn't she?
She's very fun, and I like how unapologetically, like, abrasive she is. In almost every role she plays, she's just like, fuck you, I'm Eve Myles.
One of my favourite moments in Torchwood, and it is, it's in the season of Torchwood, which no one seems to like, which is Miracle Day. But one of the fucking best moments of Torchwood, that as a whole, and one of the best Gwen Cooper moments, is when, like, some American person goes, oh, you English, you're all the same. And she goes, I'm fucking Welsh. And then just clocks her around the face. It's so good.
She has loads of those Torchwood moments. There's a moment where, like, Jack is winding her up about, like, an affair.
Yeah.
And she just turns around, slumps in one, drops this, like, 6-foot man, right, down to the ground, just goes, fuck you!
Yeah. It's like, she's great. Oh, man. She is a great character. I want to see her come back. But, yeah, no, she's Claire, who is shady, as everyone is.
Indeed, almost irritatingly shady.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Because there are, like, and obviously you kind of do get why, and it's because she is spinning a constant web of lies to evade the truth.
Yeah.
Whilst
until
also trying
just
to
all unravels in her hands.
Yeah. Right, if it was me, and I know she wanted protection from Lee, and I get that, right, but, like, living in the lead detective's house.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I
leave
would,
the country.
I would remind you of a quote from The Lord of the Rings. From Merry and or Pippin, the closer we are to danger, the further we are from home.
Okay, yeah, fair enough, but it's not really true in this context, is it?
No, and it also doesn't turn out to be true in that context. But, but to be fair to her, she evades suspicion for, like, quite a while, and the case was closed, so, like, she was doing something, right?
She's paying no rent living off the lead detective who she almost put in the ground.
Yeah, it's only because David Tennant, like, fucking had nothing to do that she was, like, that the case got reopened and, like, she fucked
My man is just out here twiddling his thumbs, like, might do that case, might go and get open heart surgery tonight. Depends on the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like her, and I like her. I don't know, there is a component... To me, it felt a bit weak, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm missing context from, like, the end of the show, because I haven't really thought... this. Like I say, this was the stuff that I was least interested in, so I haven't really thought about it properly. But, like, the kind of hand-waving and the excuses of, like, I can't stay away from Lee. I just simply love having sex with him too much.
Mm.
Like, that stuff for me felt a little bit like... But you're an adult. Like, you can choose to not have sex with someone, can't you? You can just avoid this.
But that's what I find interesting, though. That, like, toxic relationship where you know it's bad and you know it's no good for you, but there's something about them and you just cannot fucking help yourself. It's so intoxicating that you become another person. That a lot that does happen. That's not something that's, like, you know, fucking imagine. That's how a lot of people end up in fucking domestic abuse situations to start with. It is a real thing, you know?
And this does paint itself as one of those things. Like,
yeah.
Lee is very, like, hot and heavy is the wrong word, but, like...
No, but he is.
He's very, like... I mean, he fucking drags her into the fucking ocean at one point.
Yeah.
And is, like, threatening to drown her. So it's pretty grim stuff. And then, like, I do like how it all gets reframed at the end with kind of, like, I don't know, it's interesting that, like, she is seen to be the more, and maybe this is just purely because she's a female character, but she is shown to be more emotional and more nurturing and motherly throughout the season, and more kind of in tune with her emotions, whereas Lee's kind of a brick wall that's like, I do carpentering and I didn't murder people.
I think the thing about Claire that's interesting is that she's so committed to, like, not getting caught, or, like, not like she doesn't want to, like, go to jail or have her life fucked up in any way. So, like, she suddenly finds herself in this situation. She didn't kill fucking, you know, the 19-year-old fucking babysitter or whatever. She just found herself in that situation. So, like, right, I gotta fucking make the most of this. I gotta do what I can. She fucking told Lee to go kill the kid. And then she was the one who's like, right, we gotta fucking hide these bodies. We gotta do all this stuff. And I think it's shown throughout the show as well. Like, fucking, when David Tennant's like, pack your shit, you're out. And she, like, fucking, you know, breaks down, starts smashing up her house and that sort of thing. Because part of her plan was to stay here to evade capture and that type of stuff. And she breaks into the car to steal the pendant because she knows that's evidence against her. She knows that there's probably like fucking DNA traces on her. And like, she's a planner. She's someone who plans through and through. And when it goes wrong, then she's like, fuck, you know?
I mean, you see that straight, like, outwardly, like, if, especially because, like, this is a flashback. This happens obviously in the past on the night of the murders.
Yeah.
Right. You see what type of person is when she takes Ricky out to see his daughter who they've had to kill.
Yeah.
And like, firstly, horrendous scenario.
Yeah.
Right. Just top 10 worst day, right?
Yeah.
for this dad. But then he,
I mean, he's not like innocent.
Himself. He's not great at all.
He killed the fucking the other girl, so.
Yeah, which is not good stuff.
Yeah.
But you see exactly what type of person Claire is and how, like, I think this show has been very good at revealing true colors at moments of stress.
Yeah.
And she just says, like, I need you to know that that flask is buried here somewhere in the woods.
Yeah.
And it's just like, in the stressful scenario of fucking burying a dead body, she's made a contingency plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which I just find like...
And she explains it very calmly in a way that's like almost fucking... what's that word?
Like sociopathic?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah, because she's calm and controlled, and she says, I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
So that you know.
Yeah.
You don't say enough. You don't say a word.
Scary.
And it is scary, and I do like that she kind of has that. I think she uses being a woman as well. The constant,
I think, so
trying to convince Olivia Colman that she has had sex with David Tennant.
Yeah,
which is I can relate to that. I go around bragging about having fictional sex with David Tennant.
Who doesn't?
But like, I think she uses that very much. She uses sex with Lee as a bargaining tool
to
remain close to him, and I think she uses that kind of deer in headlights, I'm in trouble, protect me, to just consistently stay outside of the radar, but so that she can see it at all times and know where it's pointing. And a very interesting character. Just could have done with a whole season of it rather than taking time away from...
We got a season of it.
Yeah, but I wanted to... We're not doing this again. what'd you make of Big Lee and Ricky, I guess?
Again, just interesting characters. Ricky was annoying, and I wanted to punch him every time he was on screen. And I was like...
Have you seen Misfits?
Some of it.
He's one of the... He's that man has got some incredible comedy chops.
Is he?
Right. You wouldn't know it from watching this, but like there's an entire scene where he sings The Power of Love in its entirety.
Yeah.
He's expressing his feelings about like a 17-year-old boy, and it's very gross and it's very funny. He's one of the like the community workers. He's just he's a great actor, but seeing him in this, that he's got one of them faces that the second he shows up, I'm like, oh, you're either a murderer or the comic relief. And when he's not cracking any jokes, I'm like, oh, I know why you're here.
you're here
to be evil, yeah.
He is punchable. Like, when he first showed up, I was like, oh, he did it. Really?
Yeah, because he shows up and he's like, what are you doing back here investigating stuff?
Yeah.
And David Tennant's like, I'm just trying to do the best for you and your family. And he's like, the best you can do for my family is leave him alone. Stop looking at this case, please.
We didn't really talk about this last week, but there's the kind of ongoing thread of, like, David Tennant's a dad who doesn't quite get stuff right. Mm. And he's got, like, a strained relationship with his daughter because him and his wife have broken up. And he, like, he wants to, like, be there, but he can't and stuff. And we meet his daughter this season, and it's quite a nice little scene and stuff.
That is a good little scene, and I like that there's this element of, like, she says, like, "Oh, school's shit" or something, and he's like, "Whoa, we just throwing around that word, are we now? What's all this about?" And it's like, come on, man. Come on, man, get real.
But then she's like, "That's not swearing." I'm like, "Yeah, it is.
Yeah, what are you talking about?"
I would just say that in front of my pet. Well, I probably would. I was an edgy kid. I was like, "I'll swear if I want to, mate."
Do you remember your first time officially swearing?
In front of my parents? Or just like...
In general, yeah.
Oh, no. I used to do it all the time as a kid. Like, not in front of my parents, but like when I was out with friends and, like, you know, you think you're cool and hard and stuff and you swear like way more than anyone should as a kid because you're like, "What the fuck are you fucking fuck? But
I naturally
swear a lot though. Like it's just part of my vocabulary. Like fuck is just a word that I say a lot because it's almost like a thing. It's just like fucking what is it? You know, like that sort of stuff.
You fill sentences with
it. Yeah, exactly.
You're thinking and you're like, "Oh, fuck, what's that?"
Yeah, fuck. Or cunt, that's just like
rolls off the tongue too easily. No, I distinctly remember my first time swearing because I was like, I remember it because I remember thinking, "I bet I look fucking sick right now," right? Because I was in the year six playground and the year six had a special playground.
First time you swore was in year six.
Yeah, well, the first time I remembered, like, I probably said like a few shits and a few craps here and there, right? But
crap is definitely not swearing.
Ah, well, you never know.
No, you do. It's not swearing. If they can say it on fucking TV before 9 p.m., it's not swearing.
That is true. That is the cutoff in Britain. That's how you know.
Pre watershed, then
that's the distinguisher. But I remember they were like, "Oh, it wasn't a teacher, but it was like my mate," and that we were being called in to, like, you know, break time was ending, and he was like, "Come on, we got to go in," and I was like, "I don't give a fuck." And I there must have been explosions behind me, right? I must have gone into black and white and slow-mo, like I was looking cool. But yeah, anyway, sorry, you were saying about Lee and Ricky.
I have no idea what I was saying. Kind of the life of me remember, but fine.
It's almost as if there's less to say about them because it's not an interesting subplot.
I'll say it's not as interesting as the trial, but like I'm not out here like, "Oh, it's so bad."
Like, fair enough.
I liked it. I don't know.
All right. Did you like? I tell you one thing we didn't really touch on was the. I really like the lawyer characters, right? The primary lawyer of the defense,
Fleabag.
No, not Fleabag. Fleabag's mum.
Oh, Fleabag's mum. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's not Fleabag's mum?
Yeah.
She's someone else's mum.
She is, yeah.
And I like that whole... I really like the element of, like, how dangerous a defense attorney can be when she's already jaded about the law.
Yeah.
And how the justice system works. And she's like, "Well, there's no fucking justice for me and my family." So, like, she just switches that thing that humans have called empathy. She just switches it off and she's like, "It's a job. I don't give a fuck. I didn't get it." And she isn't that. You see little windows into her soul that she's not that cold.
Yeah.
And it is a bit of an act. Her and Daredevil had history together.
Yeah. She used to work for Daredevil.
Mm. And they don't, and they didn't split up amicably, it seems.
No. Yeah. Because of it, like, something happened with her son. He, like, got in trouble for something. He's now in prison. And she wanted Daredevil to, like, take the trial and represent him and that kind of stuff. But Daredevil wouldn't do it.
And, yeah, but I think that's rightful in a way.
Yeah.
You shouldn't... I think they're...
Probably too close to it.
Yeah, there almost definitely is actual kind of, like, laws about it. But, like...
Yeah.
You should not be allowed to... Like, I mean, fucking school teachers can't teach their kids.
Can they not?
I don't think so, or at least it might have changed, but they never used to be able to.
Surely they're like... But what if I have no other option? But like, the homeschool's a thing.
Yeah, but that's a different process, isn't it? That's, you have to opt into being homeschooled.
Yeah, I guess. But what if you're like, you're living in a small town where there's like only one school and like one teacher?
Well, fucking get another one.
But can't.
I don't fucking know. I didn't make the law, okay?
I don't think that's the thing. I think
it definitely was a thing.
No, I don't think it is, because like I've been at schools, like I've known people who are like their parents work at the school, they're like teachers at the school.
It might be like a last resort situation. It might be like it's avoided at all costs until it can't be.
I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not a thing, but I'm sure I've heard it before. But
I think you're making it up.
I'm not making it up.
You are. You're making up. You're lying.
But it is very much that thing of like people too close to certain scenarios. Like in terms of a professional capacity, it should be kind of deemed unethical. But in terms of a friendship capacity as well,
like a better option would have been like doctors can't operate on their own family and that kind of stuff.
Because you're probably going to bring... It's not going to be a good day at work for you. You're going to be high stress and high nerves and your family will hate you forever
you're literally too close to the situation. You're more likely to make a mistake because you're so caught up in your own emotions and you're thinking about it too much. So
there is such a thing of being too emotionally invested. There's a reason that like you don't know every doctor, and that's a good thing. There needs to be some level of secrecy to certain things and a certain level of detachment for people to do their jobs correctly.
You don't want your therapist to be your mum.
Yeah, best thing ever, yeah.
Yeah, like, can't imagine anything worse, really.
it's almost like a plot point of Broadchurch Season 1. You shouldn't be close to people when you do your job detecting everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Here's something I like.
Go on.
I like Alec and Ellie slowly becoming best friends.
I do. Yeah. That like they do that thing where they go to a hotel room and there's bloody meant to be two beds in here. What's going on with this?
But at no point is it like that though. Like, yeah. If don't get me wrong, I love a good fucking a story, a fucking good enemies to lovers, fucking hotel room story, all right? I'm here for that all day. If there's one bed in that hotel room, I'm here for it. I love it. I thrive off that shit. This is not that at no point. Like, no one wants these two to get together because they're best friends. They're not lovers.
Yeah.
And they're best friends.
They'd also be horrible.
Yeah, they are horrible.
No, but like, together, dreadful pairing. Yeah. Like, just two very pessimistic Pollies just getting cross at the world together. No, I do like, I like that you kind of his walls.
When you said pessimistic poly, I thought you meant like polyamorous, and I was like, what?
hang on, Lawrence.
Hang on,
you've missed something. I like that they're you do get more kind of walls breaking down with David Tennant's character, because you do get, like you say, you see his daughter, you see his ex-wife, you get a bit of their home life,
yeah,
and that obviously bleeds into like. Like you say, people don't just change moods depending on what scenes they're in. He'll go from seeing his family,
yeah,
being frustrated with like the lack of connection, and then immediately he'll go off to work, and Ellie will be like, "Why are you being such a fucking grump?" Like she's done with it as well now. She's equally, yeah. So when he shows up in a bad mood, she's like, "Can you not be a wanker, please?"
I love it when like, you know, those moments where like Ellie comes home and he's just there waiting. He's like, "Miller, you can give me a lift." And like, he's just like, I need you to drive me to Sandbrook.
And she's like, I'm not your fucking taxi.
But then she does it.
Yeah. What I quite like about it is she's in his boat now. She's not got, she has a very small son, but like, she's got a normal size son, a very small size.
This is something you could have said young. You could have said a baby, but the fact that you said a very small son is just very funny.
Have you seen that meme of like me trying to fill the word count, and it's like very small, young, early, new peas.
That's funny.
But no, she's in the same boat now, so I guess he just looks, he goes over to hers and is like, give me a lift, and she's like, I have a life, and he's like, you don't, we both don't have a life anymore.
Neither of us have a life.
We only live for the case. Let's do this.
It's true. It's great. I love those moments. Well, I say those moments, there's like one moment where like they're both just walking her very small son in his little pram, and the moments where just David was pushing the pram, I was like, that's cute. I like
that is cute.
Uncle Alec.
And it's not like so overt anymore, like it's not oh bloody I have to push the pram, it's just happening, and you're like, oh, that's what mates do.
It's like is just like, David Tennant reluctantly has friends. Like, he didn't want them. He didn't want a friend, but like, reluctantly. But
he needs a lift.
Yeah, but reluctantly, he's like, if I have to have a friend, then fine.
Yeah.
But only Ellie, okay? It's only Ellie, no one else.
The last thing that I was going to say was the, I like that the last scene of Joe receiving the true justice scene, the true courtroom of Joe Miller, where he will get a fair trial.
Can I say something first?
Oh, if you have to.
I do. Just one little thing. Okay. Oh, actually, no, because I'll save it for little things.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I will say is, so true justice needs to happen because Joe gets off. He's found not guilty, and it's fucking horrendous.
It's horrendous, but it's also made less insane of an outcome as the season goes on.
Yes,
like,
it's
around more about and more season likely. Six or seven, yeah, you start to go...
Episode six or seven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, around about that time, you really start to be going, like, hang on a minute, is this not going the way that we think? Is the justice system flawed?
I surely
it was
not.
Perfect up until this point.
Surely you jest.
But yeah, I like that when Paul has, or Reverend Rory has that incredible line where he's like, I need to tell you what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then the next thing you see is like Mark and Nige fucking throw him in the back of a van, and I'm like, hold on, what's happening here? Very scary. There was a part of me that when they took him up to that cliff, there was a part of me that they were basically going to be like, jump or we'll push you.
Yeah.
Which would not have been... It would have been very satisfying to see, but not for a character standpoint.
Yeah. It would have... I really like that like true justice moment where it's like... Mm. Kind of, it's not the whole town, but you know, for our purposes, the whole the people that matter anyway.
Everyone in the town with a name,
they all like come together to be like, "Fuck off!" All right, like we're not gonna kill you. We could just remember that we absolutely could, and
we will if we see you fucking around again.
And we will, but you don't live here anymore. This is you may have got away with it, you pathetic sniveling little child, but you know.
But
we know the truth, and you know the truth.
The kicker is when he has to walk through the swarm of people just watching him go.
Here's something with that, right? Yeah. Is there a mistake in that? Because the way it's framed, it's like I might be wrong, but like to me, the way it was framed is that I think there might be a continuity error in there. But the way it was framed for me is like Beth and Ellie are in the hut with Joe, okay? Yeah. They have their thing, they blah, 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 they say all that. And then, like, Joe leaves, and then he's walking through the swarm. But Beth and Ellie are in the crowd as well.
Maybe they...
And then he walks past them.
This is quite a theatrical moment. Maybe they had him wait there for a minute while they got themselves into... Like, they were like, you need to do the walk of shame, but we obviously need to be there.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's a scene missing or something, but, like... Or maybe I'm just wrong. But
it might be one of them like creative cuts,
yeah,
where we're like, "Ooh, it's the idea of what's happening here," kind of thing. No. I think the kicker of no. I think the kicker of it is when it's like it's so blunt and it's so country,
yeah,
and it's very like it, like Joe is walking throughout them. He's like, "You can't just make me disappear." Mark's like, "We can," and then just puts his arm around his son.
Yeah,
and his own boy is looking up at him like, I got nothing to say to you. Like I got nothing to say. And like Ellie talks about how like, yeah, you won, well done, but you're never gonna see your fucking kids again. Like,
yeah,
if you had fessed up, they probably could have seen you in prison. But you will, like, you wanted this life, so you have to live it isolated, completely alone.
Off you pop.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And I really really like that. I think it's like, it's a good sense of true justice, and it's also a good kind of like everyone there is like, you should have faced consequences. You know that, we know that, but we are happy to kill you and all face consequences if we ever see you again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great, great scene. And I love that they do it in the cabin as well. Like really just making him sit there, and Beth talking about, she's counted, there's like 14 knives in the building. and like, oh, I genuinely thought they were going to kill him for like a large portion of the scene, and then it got.
Do
to
you
the
think
point where,
they
like,
should have?
I think he would have deserved it, but I don't want these characters to stoop the low.
They're better than that. Yeah. They're better.
He
than
deserves
him.
It, but he's lucky that he's got some somewhat well-adjusted individuals around him.
Yeah.
Why the fuck would he still want to live in that town?
Yeah.
But he's like, you can't send me away. It's like, you should be running.
That is insane to me. The fact that he didn't immediately just get on a fucking train and just bolt
go.
It. Just get the fuck out of town. But he's got kids, and I guess. And
yeah, but like, cut your losses, man. You killed their friend.
Yeah, yeah, but
your son's best friend died because you killed him. And
it's easy to say
you didn't.
It's easy to say cut your losses, but there's kids.
Yeah, but like, be practical.
He's not practical. He killed an 11-year-old boy because he didn't want to hug him. We've established that he's not practical, Lawrence.
That's true, yeah. He's delusional is what he says, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it tracks. It does track.
Beautiful stuff. Shall we do some little things?
Yes, go for it.
All right, yeah. Here's one little thing that I have, and maybe more if I think of them. But my first and possibly last little thing is, how cool is David Tennant's little gaffe?
It's very cool, and everyone that visits it is like, you live here. I'm like, that's great.
That is fucking, for me, I live in my own, right? I'd fucking love that place.
Yeah.
Nice. It's a decent enough size for one person and fucking manage. It's great little fucking waterfront property. It's very cute. I'd love that little gaff.
I'd love it as well, and I'd love the little skinny alleyway leading into it.
Like, yeah.
I'm off the beaten track. The only people that know I'm here are the fucking swans, mate.
And the whole town, because they all stop by every morning, apparently.
Yeah, literally, he can't walk out of his fucking front door without someone being like, I've got some information for you.
And his doors are always open. He's always just like making a cup of tea, and there's just someone like in his living room like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. It makes for some very good frustrated David Tennant performance, which is very fun.
I do love some frustrated David Tennant performances. He does it well.
Indeed, he does.
Yeah.
I like the one of the ending shots of the season where the Latimers and the Millers that aren't sex criminals are like...
So everyone but Joe.
Basically everyone but Joe. They're all kind of mending old wounds on the beach. And they're happy to like... Ellie shows up and like she's invited in warmly by Beth. And it's...
Yes.
The hostility seems to have gone now that Beth has... And like, there's an element of like Beth was heavily pregnant. Right.
Yeah, yeah. She wasn't thinking clearly.
Yeah, like, no. Then there's an element of like, I don't think she like, and who could blame her?
No one can blame her.
But there is an element of like, I think she's been able to kind of readjust her position a bit.
Yeah.
And you know, it probably didn't hurt seeing how fucking devastated Ellie was to see her husband walk free and everything else.
Oh, 100%.
Actually, Beth probably realized that they were both ready to fucking bury this man together.
At no point was she on Joe's side.
No.
Fucking point. Yeah.
Any other little things?
No.
I've got one where Ben... I've got two more little things. The first one is Ben, who is Daredevil's assistant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Having a chat with Phoebe Waller-Bridge after the case wraps up. And she's like, oh, don't be a sore loser. And he's like, yeah, I'm going on to an armed robbery or something after this.
Yeah.
And then she's just like talking about how like she won the case and, you know, she's just happy to move on, work. And he just walks over and is like, you're a deeply horrible person.
Yeah, she thinks he's going to like flirt or try it on or something. And
yeah.
But then he's like, trick, you're awful.
Yeah. And it's like, it's the humbling of the century.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you needed this. You are not a person. You are a shell of a human.
Now go make Fleabag.
Yeah, now go make Fleabag.
Now go make that critically acclaimed TV show, which I haven't seen.
It's so good, man.
I know it is, but I haven't seen it.
Fleabag is very, very good. And the other little thing was when Newspaper Woman arrived at Daredevil's house, and Daredevil was like, it's only been you.
Yeah, because she's Daredevil's wife.
Yeah, I like. Yeah, well, hang on, that's not true.
Well, she is now.
Oh yeah, she is now.
Yeah,
I'd imagine.
Maybe here he goes. Fucking
no.
Forced agenda, is it?
No.
Broadchurch gone woke.
No, maybe. Yeah, exactly. How dare they? No, maybe I just don't have a good face for like identifying ages.
You don't.
But she felt like a daughter to that woman.
Really?
Not a partner. Yeah, I never picked down a romantic vibe.
You definitely don't. They are the same age.
Fair enough. One looks significantly older.
No, they are very
much. Do you think?
Yeah, they are very much equivalent of age. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just blind to it then, yeah. Maybe I'm like Herb, going blind.
Maybe you are.
And I'm a better lawyer.
It's not
imagine
true.
Losing the case, L plus ratio. Nathan, do you have any recommendations?
What's this?
Nathan, what we do at this point in the show is we talk about our little recommendations. It could be something we've watched, we could have read it, we could have listened to it, we could have seen it, we could have experienced it. It could be absolutely anything that you've done this week. What would you like to recommend to me and our lovely listeners?
I would like to recommend Actors on Actors, I believe it's called.
Ooh, I like Actors on Actors.
I had never seen it until earlier today. I watched Cillian Murphy versus Margot. Not versus, they're not fighting. Cillian Murphy.
They're scrapping.
Cillian Murphy and Margot Robbie. They're like, just basically sit down and have like a 40-minute chat. And like, oh, wasn't Barbenheimer great? And it was. and yeah, it was great. It was a good, fun chat. Variety are pretty shitty, like, as a company.
Yeah.
And like, they were very much like, oh, the strike is going on because these greedy actors will refuse to.
They want to get their grubby hands on more money that they don't deserve.
They just want more money. They're pretty shitty in that respect. But this is pretty cool. And yeah, it was a good fun chat. It very much gives off the vibes of like Cillian Murphy. I think he's a bit like me in the fact that like he kind of like takes his time and pauses like when he talks. Like I pause quite a lot because I like think of what I say and stuff, yeah. Which is why like editing this podcast is a bit of a nightmare because there's always like yeah. gaps that need to be
and
cut out.
And then there's me next to you that yeah. I was never ever conscious of this, but I have a real stunted way of speaking. I take random pauses in the middle of my sentences.
Yeah, yeah, we both do. We both do though.
It's not good. It's not good when you edit your own podcast. You just become so painfully aware of like tics that you have.
Yeah, yeah. You also repeat yourself a lot. You say like you go like
I do. I stutter like the first thing that I say a lot of the time. Yeah. Like the starting of a sentence, I often struggle to get through it. Who knows?
but yeah, so he like he's quite methodical in that. He's like he's basically introverted and he takes his time. He's pretty quiet and a shaded person. And Margot Robbie is like an ADHD puppy. Just like, just like so excited and like just wanting to talk about everything. And Killian's just like, yeah, yeah.
I've watched that today. What I loved about it was like at the end when she's like begging him to play his character in Peaky Blinders again. Yeah. And he's like, he's trying to find the most PR friendly, nice way of saying no.
Yeah.
But like also not wanting to just completely make her look like a moron.
Yeah.
Actors on Actors is a really fun show, but like you always have to like I often skip the first 2 minutes because it's just them being like, and obviously you were like incredible in this, and they're like, oh shucks, no I wasn't. Like you're nominated for an Oscar, you know you were good. just go thanks. Take some compliments.
Yeah, but they gotta appear humble, don't they?
Yeah, I know they gotta, and I understand the game.
They can't just be like, yes I am. Okay.
Well, like I would like to see one of them be like, I'm really glad you think so, because I fucking worked my ass off for that.
Yeah, but it's, you know,
sometimes I'll edit a video for someone and I'll look at the comments and it'll be like, the editing's great in this, and I'm like, it fucking is. I know. Hell
but,
yeah.
But if you tweeted that though, you'd be like,
yeah, I wouldn't say it publicly.
Exactly. There you go. See?
Yeah, I understand the game. I get it. Yeah. Have you got your eye on any other actors on actors that you want to watch?
No, I don't know who what else there is, to be honest. I've only seen that one.
The worst thing is when you have an actor, but then like, you check in, it's like 6 years ago, and I'm like, oh, they can't talk about that movie that they hadn't filmed yet. Oh. I want to hear them talk about that movie.
What other ones are there?
There's loads of good ones. I think they recently did one with RDJ and Mark Ruffalo, which was fun.
The Iron Man boys.
The Iron Man boys, but they ended up mostly talking about, I think the Zodiac was David Fincher.
Yeah.
Yeah. They ended up just talking about that. And I was like, I haven't seen Zodiac, so I can't really, it's a bit boring for me. Mm-hmm. One that's really good is they did Steven Yeun and Pedro Pascal. That was very fun. They had quite a lot of Mandalorian chat in that, which was fun as well.
Steven Yeun?
Yeah, because he was in Beef, wasn't he?
And yeah, but he wasn't in The Mandalorian.
No, but they're not always from the same thing. It's just they take two actors that are they think would be the most interesting pairing. Mm-hmm. That have been in something popular that they're obviously there to promote. It's a junket for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember all of them, but they often do writers on writers and directors on directors, and that's really interesting too. Nathan, ask me if I have a recommendation.
Do you have a recommendation?
I do.
What is it?
It is the sitcom Superstore.
Fucking hell. All right.
Right, hang on. Why is it when you tell me to watch a sitcom and I go, oh, then you have a problem with it, but you can do the exact same to me?
Because I've seen some of Superstore and I couldn't get into it.
It's, like, largely the same as other comedies of the era.
Like, yeah, I watched, like, 4 episodes and I was like, eh, not for me.
Did the lead character annoy you? Is that why?
I can't even remember who the lead character is.
It's Jonah. His character is very, like, performative white man. Like,
probably.
Optimist. I hate it when things are unequal, and I love equality kind of guy.
Probably. I don't know.
Like a very outspoken podcast host. But yeah. Anyway, I think it's a really good sitcom. It's very fun. It's on Netflix. You can watch it all. Often when I'm, like, working, because I work from home, I like to just have something on in the background. Just, I don't know. The day can be very boring if you only ever hear, like, one very excited American shouting about games all day.
You work from home?
Yeah.
You don't work at Caravan of Garbage HQ in Australia?
Yeah, we actually have a caravan. We work there.
Whoa. In Australia?
Yeah, it's in Australia. And we only eat from the bin, hence the garbage.
That's what
we
do. Yeah. Well, interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not allowed to do any of my other client work there. I can only go to the Caravan of Garbage when I'm working on that.
So you got to commute daily to Australia, which I don't even think is possible. And
it depends how hard you work for it.
I mean, physically, it's not possible to commute daily to Australia.
For you?
No, for everyone.
I'm dedicated to the grind, so I make it work.
No, for everyone. It's physically not possible.
My man hasn't been taking Uber premiums, or whatever they're called.
I guess it depends where you live, but from the UK, it's physically not possible.
Yeah, if I lived next door to the caravan, I could commute there every day easily.
Well, yeah, if you lived in Australia, then you could do it. You'd already be there.
What is this?
I don't know.
We're debating about my fictional commute to a place that doesn't exist.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah,
plug your shitty little fucking sitcom or whatever.
It's a good sitcom. It's a fun little show. America Ferrera is really, really fun. Yes, it's very good. It's very fun. It's very silly. Ooh. It has, like, as all good sitcoms tend to be, it's, like, somewhat workplace related. It's the kind of the crux of this one is that it's set at, like, a retail store where it's kind of an all-purpose store, and it's, like,
a Walmart.
Yeah, it's basically a Walmart, and it's there. What I like about it is it's not just the everyday goings-on. As always, there's some sort of, like, corporate entity, which are... It creates some good drama, and actually, there's some episodes that, like, are fairly hard-hitting for, like, sitcoms. But yeah, genuinely, like, a great group of characters and some really, really funny performances as well.
I'll tell you, there's that guy who's in the show, he's in a wheelchair.
Garrett is his character's name.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. But I don't think he's in a wheelchair in real life because he plays a character in Parks and Rec who can very much walk.
I don't think he's actually wheelchair bound, though.
Well, no, given... By the fact that I just said he couldn't.
No, but some people that have wheelchairs can still walk. Like, it's not...
That's fair. Yeah. Very fair. But he's good. I like him. He's very funny in Parks and Rec. Yeah, Parks and Rec is a better show. You should have recommended Parks and Rec.
I haven't seen Parks and Rec recently.
You've seen Parks and Rec?
Yeah, but not this week. And this is something I've been doing this week.
Adam Scott?
Yeah, I'm aware who's in Parks and Rec then.
What's he called? The guy?
Ben.
No.
Adam Scott.
Oh, fuck. What's his name?
Rob Lowe.
No.
Aziz Ansari.
The main guy. Not the main guy.
Ron?
Hello. Yeah, what's he called? What's he called?
Oh.
Nick Offerman. Fuck. Nick Offerman.
You made me draw
fucking
a blank.
Fucking hell.
Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, good show. Two good recommendations. Go watch Actors on Actors and also Superstore on Netflix.
Actors and Actors and Parks and Rec. Check them out where you can.
Indeed, indeed. And everyone.
I don't think you even listened to what I said then, did you?
No, I didn't.
I can tell, yeah. I said, Lawrence, Actors and Actors and Parks and Rec, check them out.
I mean, yes, fine, do that as well. I don't give a shit.
That just proves you just do not listen to me.
Sometimes. I'm at the outro point.
You
it's
just
autopilot.
Tune me out and just go on with. Because you do that thing, you just tune me out, and then it doesn't even matter what I say, you'll just go, indeed, indeed. And then you'll move on and say something.
I am
else.
Very guilty of doing that.
Yes, you are.
Nathan, speaking of stuff, did you know that next week we're going to be doing this?
My name's Ellie. I'm a detective with Wessex Police. You called about an attack?
Wahoo! It's not Mario.
It's
Lawrence,
not Mario.
What are you looking forward to most about Broadchurch Season 3? What do you hope? Do you have any hopes, expectations, dreams? Follies.
I'm very. If I was, I'm now very skeptical of where they can go with the Latimers and everything else. Because they've literally finished their arcs. For lack of, I mean, like maybe
you always
more.
Say this. You always like.
Yeah, because the show told
is,
me.
But is an arc ever finished though? Because
I think
like
if you wrap up everything you started. Yes.
All right. Okay. But all right. So. You met your wife in 2015, okay?
Okay, yeah.
She was with another person at the time. You flirted back and forth. You got together. There was, but then, like, she got back with her ex, and there was a whole other thing, and then you cried to me on the phone.
Yeah. Why are we doing this?
And then, I'm going somewhere, don't worry. And then you moved in together, and then you got together, and then you... moved into a house, like a not a uni house, like a proper house, and then you got engaged, and then you got married. And I guess your arc is done now, so we never need to hear from you ever again. What I'm saying is, Lawrence, is people's lives are ongoing, okay? Mm-hmm. Their stories are never done. There's always room for characters to grow and develop and for more stories to be told.
I agree, but these are fictional characters written by other people... and it tells a chapter of their life, right? That, like, you can have fulfilling endings without knowing exactly what a character does from the second they're born to when they die. Like,
okay.
That's
yes.
a boring way of... I don't want every single gap filled. The show came in and showed
you're not
me...
going to get every... It's three seasons. You're clearly not going to get every single second of their life from birth to death filled in.
What,
okay?
But what I'm saying is what they the points they seem to raise was...
We're arguing again.
I know. Community... A shattered community because of what happened and a man who refused to take accountability for what happened and how that and those relationships and that event shattered the lives of so many people. And by the end of season two, that man had been sent away and the families had rekindled and things seemed to be on track. So if things are suddenly not on track next season, it will feel like a step backwards.
But okay, but what you're doing there is you're... I don't want to get into it, but you've got a very narrow way of looking at things.
Okay.
You're looking at things very narrowly, and you're like, these are the only options. There are no other options. These are the only things we can possibly focus on. So therefore, I see no reason why these could ever come back. Okay? Like...
But that's just cohesive storytelling, though, right? Like...
No, it's not. Just wait. Okay.
I want to know what does happen. I'm gonna watch season three, obviously. So we will discuss that then. But Nathan, in the meantime, I would like to thank you. Yes, you. This is not directed at Nathan. This is directed at the audience now.
Okay. Yes. Well, you did say Nathan. I would like to thank you, okay? So you can understand my confusion.
I can. Well, I'm also going to thank you for listening to me in this podcast.
But
also
I'm going to thank... listen to you. Yeah. I rarely do.
I would also like to say thank you to the listeners for listening. If you have enjoyed the show, then please feel free to leave a little 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. That'd be very much appreciated.
Or tell it to a friend, recommend a friend. That's how we get
new
listeners.
That is also a good point, yeah.
Yeah, do that.
You can also give us a little follow on Twitter at Another Happy Pod for updates, as well as suggesting your thoughts. We've got a little pinned tweet where you can go and, you know, fill in a little form. Nathan, are you aware that we have another podcast?
Yes, I am, Lawrence. It's called Still Got Legs. It's our Doctor Who rewatch podcast, where every week we watch and discuss an episode of Doctor Who. Not at random. We're doing it in order through the revival era. It's a bloody good fun time, and we'd be thrilled if you would join us. So come along.
We truly, truly would. Thank you very, very much for listening, and we will see you next week for the return of Crime Drama Christmas.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.